time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Do you like what you do for a living? These things you see?
You have to wear blinders sometimes. Most times.
Detective William Somerset is looking for a way out.
You're retiring. 6 more days and you're all the way gone.
So how long have you lived here?
Too long.
Detective David Mills is looking for a way in.
We'll be spending every waking hour together from now until the time I leave. I'll show you who your friends and enemies are.
Look, I'm going to come inside 5 years, not here.
Now.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have ourselves a homicide.
They're caught in a game.
No fingerprints and no witnesses of any kind.
Nope. About the only thing we know about that guy right now is he's totally insane.
Where the price of sin is death.
There are 7 deadly sins. Gluttony.
You're going to come take a look at this.
Greed.
No one touches anything.
Sloth, wrath, pride, lust, and envy. 7. You can expect 5 more of these.
Body was found on Tuesday morning.
I hate this city.
I'm going to get who did this.
This will be the very definition of swift justice.
There are 2 more bodies, 2 more victims.
This guy is methodical, exacting, and worst of all, patient.
He's laughing at us.
He had a gun.
He's 2 murders away from completing his masterpiece. Hey!
Let's finish it.
Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Something in our sky. Something.
outside. Something in our blood. Something in our scars.
The heart's filthy lesson. I'll say that again. The heart's filthy lesson. The closing part and the closing segment, of course, from the whole wondrous world of Seven, which is Julie on board, and Julie considered in a whole variety of ways. In fact, you may actually even go further with respect to that whole excitement and turn around and say, actually, forget Seven, look at the predictive nature of Seven, because surely when you actually have the character of John Doe in Seven, then it sort of demonstrates that what is going to happen to the character and probably the actor, as we actually see a whole range of sort of bits and pieces there, because yes, Kevin Spacey is probably going to be facing that kind of jail time shortly. Who doesn't give a smile when he actually turns around and says, I need to see a lawyer? What say you, Richard, for this movie back in 1995?
Well, I have to say, firstly, that when I suddenly realised it was back in the cinemas, I couldn't resist going again. Now, just to alert listeners, Seven is not everybody's cup of tea.
It's got Gwyneth Paltrow in it. I mean, all right, she loses her head, but what the hey?
Excited about that. You really, really can't begin with a comment like that. The reference, of course, was the fact that she's in a city which is never specified, but is extremely nervous about her surroundings and being pregnant, wonders whether or not she can bring a child into the world under those circumstances.
That's New York for you. That's New York, clearly.
Actually, it's never specified. I was trying to find out where, and of course,
you've got yellow taxis. If you've got yellow taxis, you can either be in Middlesbrough or New York, and that's the end of it, really.
I think that it's interesting. It was filmed in LA, but it could be, well, New York, Chicago, who knows where. But the venue isn't important so much as the human
deadly
heart.
Deadly sins.
The human heart of darkness this movie explores. Now, I have to say, it's a very unusual movie, a warning to those who might find certain scenes very, very distressing.
There's an awful use of the F-bomb, Richard, an awful lot of the F-bomb. I mean, that's dropped on many occasions.
Well, what fascinated me about Seven particularly was the relationship between William Somerset, played by Morgan Freeman, who is a detective on the police force, who's retiring. In fact, he's retiring in a week, but this week the 7 days in the week, and that has a certain significance here. He's being replaced by David Mills, played by Brad Pitt. Now, Mills isn't a rookie. He's had some experience, but Somerset doesn't think
and
he's...
Also, Richard, David Mills, not to be confused with the former Middlesbrough and Sheffield Wednesday footballer and West Bromwich Albion.
I'm sure that listeners will be grateful for that elucidation. But when they realise what Mills has to go through in his initiation, so to speak, well, firstly, he's married. He's married to Tracy Mills, played by Gwyneth Paltrow. And they have a flat which isn't very enviable, since it was sold to them and they didn't realise that the subway would shake them every few minutes. A serial killer, so it turns out, who kills, that's putting it mildly, his victims. It's a very gruesome movie. There are subliminal flashes of the scenes of the crime, shall we just call
you
it
that? You don't see any actual killing at all. You do not see it at all. It's all done by David Fincher's mastery of the implication of what's going there. We see the end product in some instances, not all, but...
May we clarify the end product? I'm just wanting to warn any listeners who might find the end product a little distressing. I think that's fair, don't you?
As I say, it's the Kevin Spacey life story, surely. This is how he's going to end up. You know, 1995, he was playing it. 2022, he'll be experiencing it.
What I would say about this movie, firstly, it's got a wonderful script. You get to know the characters, you get to know Morgan Freeman's character very, very well, and as you do, Brad Pitt's, it's a masterclass when it comes to acting, and it's backed up by superb dialogue, and also what you have are visuals you won't forget in a hurry. Now, very often in chase scenes, and this is actually probably no exception, that they movies take liberties, because movies do. I mean, like Matthew Bourne, for example, jumping over rooftops and all the rest of it. There is a chase
scene. Oh, come now. Jordan Peele has never taken liberty in any of his three movies so far and won't do it in Nope either. But that's to come.
That's to come. But what's also to come here is the fact that this killer, having begun the first deadly sin onto the second deadly sin, is obviously going to strike again and again. And what's more, shall we just say he has an agenda of his own. This is an extraordinary film. Visually, it's amazing. It's been...
A lot of rain, Richard. I thought it was too much rain in it, really.
I think that the rain... Yes, it's raining all the time.
That's why it has to be New York as opposed to Los Angeles, you see, because of the rain and the yellow taxis.
Well, it could be Chicago, but then, of course, again, it's a universal city, because what you're seeing, of course, is the universal sickness of humanity, and that is John Doe.
Excluding Lincoln, of course, if you're talking about universal cities.
But John Doe is very well played by John C. McGinley. He's a step ahead of the cops at most stages of this movie, and I have to say again... this is brilliantly photographed. It's claustrophobic. It's quite horrific. The dialogue's often very witty, especially when Brad Pitt tries to pronounce certain names, the Marquis de Sade and so forth. It's very funny.
No, Sade, she was a singer, Richard. So she was a singer, a very popular 1980s. It's understandable that he would actually make that cultural challenge. You know, he was saying S-A-D. You don't say Sard, it's Sade, you know? Well, so I understand why he said that.
There's also St. Thomas Aquinas and so forth. Quite a few. Morgan Freeman's a bit of a literary buff, you see. He's pretty appalled when he goes into a library. And a library has a particular significance, because if you borrow a book in this particular city, you'll find the FBI have a record of it. And that is...
Spoiler!
Alex, for you to talk about spoilers is... I can only say I'm breathless.
No, that's a Buddha souffle, Richard. That's a completely different movie.
Bill Leonis will have to be told, I think, of the spoiler that you've just dropped. Which most... I'm glad to say that Natasha and Kathy weren't tuning in at that time, but suffice it to say that this is an amazing...
Richard, don't lose your head, please.
This is an amazing film from the very, very start. You get jumpy footage, you get the world out of joint, you get a deep feeling of a deeply, deeply sick society in many ways, where humanity tries to survive. Morgan Freeman's character, William Somerset, quotes Ernest Hemingway, the world is a fine place and worth fighting for. I agree with the second part. And I say 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I figured it would be a 10 out of 10, Richard. It's okay. Natasha, let's turn to your good self. I mean, clearly, Richard is putting this in the same category as David Lean's Lawrence of Arabia. And strangely enough, not Olivia Newton-John's Xanadu, which is my own personal favourite. But anyway, Natasha, have you seen this on Amazon Prime? Is it one that you're looking for? Did you enjoy it? Do you think, my word, I wasn't even born when this movie was made back in 1995?
When exactly did it come out in 1995? Because that was the year I was born.
There you are, you see, celebratory.
But no, it's a good movie. It's a classic, isn't it, really? As Richard said, it's not really for the faint of heart. It's probably on the edge of what about just about I can stomach. If you're a sort of a...
Yeah, that's gluttony, Natasha. That's another unfortunate thing, really.
Right. No, that's me gone then. That's me out. Oh, I'll check my blinds. If you're a Criminal Minds fan, it's probably something like akin to like that, I would describe it as. The ending is very iconic. I think in some ways it's interesting. It's an interesting depiction, really, because it feels quite realistic in that it's not happy go lucky, everything's okay. It feels like the reactions to what the characters are doing feels very human. The way that everything's happening, it does feel very human, even though it's very dark. So yeah, it's very intense, but it's a very interesting depiction of humanity and what it could be and what, unfortunately, yeah.
On the plus side, David Mills has presumably now been released for good behaviour in the fictional world of Seven from that point of view. So you know, he'll have served his time.
Let's hope not.
Really? You're not a Brad Pitt fan? Outrageous.
David Mills. What do you mean, David Mills? You're not suggesting they'd lock him up? I don't believe so.
Oh. Listen, if the former president of the United States can actually have his home raided by the FBI... what's going to happen with Barack Obama and his hidden documents? That's all I can say. Kathy, let's turn to your good self as somebody who in a few weeks' time will, all being well, be heading off to Ukraine for more excitement.
Yeah, I see the shock in your faces. I will fill you guys in, I promise. But there is something I do have to say about the American government, and that is they never forget. I just hope, okay, I watched this film maybe 15 years ago, if I remember correctly. And I know it came out way before then, but it made me go through a huge revelation, which is between Seven and Willy Wonka, there were a lot of assignments in school about the seven deadly sins. And I'm not sure if you were in education in the late 90s and throughout the 2000s, but there were always a group project around these two concepts. So I didn't realize what an impact this movie had on my upbringing, which was like kind of fun to go through. Also, can you spoil something that was released in 95, 96?
Yeah, precisely. This is how long do you actually wait?
Guys.
Fair point. Yeah.
Well, you can, you absolutely can. I'm afraid.
Alex has definitely been doing so.
It was telegraphed. It was telegraphed, Richard. Even actually in the cinema when I saw it first time around in 95, it was telegraphed. That was what's going to happen. That's not a spoiler. That's just David Fincher doing his stuff.
There are those of us who know how to avoid spoilers most of the time. It's not foolproof because even in the week you get spoilers. But I always say those who give spoilers should be shot. I'm sure Phil Lee.
And it's that kind of advocacy of violence, Richard, that actually proves that we've got a very sick society at hand, really.
Richard, are you sure you're not from the US?
Exactly.
It's one of the deadliest sins of spoilers.
Anyway,
can you guys
Kathy,
recite the seven deadly sins? Because I went to Catholic school, so. Yeah.
And let's go for virtues rather than vices. You know, I think we should go on that basis as well, because that's always important. What score would you actually give Seven, Kathy? Would it be a 7 for you? Because it probably would be a 7.5 for me.
It's actually really high up there for me. I'm glad I rewatched it this week. That really helped me. I think I'm going to give it an 8. It surprised me. Maybe some things that I could live without. But for the most part, I'm going to give it an 8.
Too liberal use of the F-bomb for me. Natasha, what about yourself?
No, I'll go with Kathy. I think 8's a good score. I would probably give it more, but it's not massively, it's on the edge of kind of my kind of tolerance of that kind of genre, if that makes sense. The graph, so that's why it's probably missing a little.
Newbie to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition as far as the film review slot is actually concerned, Kayleigh Mansell, when you're not actually reading English and creative writing at the University of Lincoln, is this a movie you're likely to be checking out?
Yeah, I love this film. It's great. I love psychological thrillers, and I think this is just a staple into you know, the genre, and I love the ending. I love the completionist area and aspect of the ending, and the fact that he so brilliantly chooses his two enemies, so to speak, to complete the Seven Deadly Sins plot of his. I think that's so brilliant. And despite being released before my time, so to speak, quote unquote, I think it still holds its legacy today. And anybody that will watch it today wouldn't think... I don't know, wouldn't see it that way, wouldn't see it as before a time. I think it continues and it holds its legacy really well. And I, not to say I'm a fan of Brad Pitt, but I really do like this film.
Kevin Spacey, on the other hand, what's not to love, really? I mean, everything from The Usual Suspects onwards. Actually, that's an unfortunate phrase when you're dealing with Kevin Spacey, particularly given his current sort of legal ramifications, but never mind. Okay, Natasha, do you want to go down the line of the real-life Ron Howard epic 13 Lives, or would you rather go for Nope? Which one are you going to go for?
I'm going with 13 Lives. It's the one that got me the most excited. I really want to know what Richard has to say about this one.
Excellent choice. I gave it a 10 out of 10. Richard probably slightly lower. Richard, off to you.
That's right, just slightly though, but 9, Alex, so it's pretty similar. It's a very, very good film, and Ron Howard, I think he excelled at Apollo 13 in this sort of docudrama, based, as we all know, we've discussed last week, on the rescue of a football team and their coach from the Luang Bang Caves in Thailand, and indeed the famous rescue is trapped in a system of caves which are flooding. And what's clever, firstly, Howard, the way, from a time point of view, you're drawn in, you also have the sense of mankind and the universality of the rescue is very well done. That mentions that so many nations are contributing, trying to fight against nature. And
it's like
also
Thunderbirds, but real life.
Very much real life, and also particularly interesting that you've got this elaborate system of caves, and Howard, just to help you along, has this on screen. So in fact, you can trace what's happening and the difficulties by actual maps. It's as I say, it is the emotional side, the tension of the rescue, the fact you know what's going to happen is one thing, but that doesn't really matter. It builds.
Well, everybody lives, Richard.
That is actually not necessarily the case, Alex. However, I'm brushing.
That's true. Somebody actually does not make it. I'm just saying. Like the Titanic, we know that sinks.
You said not everybody.
Yes.
The sound is not perfect, and I thought you suddenly, yes. Well, no, but the point here is that Howard has good actors, he has good visuals, he's got a sense of place and atmosphere. We have the Thai SEALs, who are the Navy divers who try initially, the governor who was retiring but is kept in place to solve matters and take the blame, and also the three cave drivers, Richard Stanton, played by Viggo Mortensen, John Valanthan, played by Colin Farrell, and Chris Jewell, played by Tom Bateman. And on top of that, we have, of course, the anaesthetist, Richard Harris, who's such a pivotal role, played by Joel Edgerton. I mean, it's a very, very good film. The sheer audacity of what happens, I'm not going into it because anyone who doesn't remember will, I think, get somewhat of a shock when you actually see the sheer ingenuity of the way this is handled. It's a very good film. The only reason I don't give it 10 out of complete 10 is simply the length a little. But apart from that, I think Howard's done a very good job.
He'll be pleased to hear that, Richard, I'm sure, when he tunes into these regular podcasts. Let's see if Natasha is also giving thumbs up from your own perspective.
Oh, it's got Viggo Mortensen in it. It's already a 10. It's very... I've only seen the trailer and I'm already hooked. And I'm hooked in a way I've not been hooked in a movie trailer for a long, long time. So, and I think it's the real element of it. And I think elements of it I'm also personally connecting to with my family background, coming from a fire and rescue services background for a lot of my family. I'm making those connections. So yeah, I'm really chomping at the bit to see this. Where can I see it? Is it
online, Natasha? Go onto Amazon, that lovely device that's actually there, and you can watch it in its full glory as it's meant to be watched on a screen that you can actually have in your domestic environment and pause at suitable times when you wish to actually sort of move and do various other bits and pieces. So thankfully they've withdrawn it from the cinema after a short while of exhibition and decided to actually restore it to its natural, logical place. The movie that Howard basically made for Amazon, which is worthwhile seeing. So you can see it actually now, literally today in Australia.
I can only challenge you to tell that to Phil Innes and Robin Pierce and see it while their responses. The reason I happened to see it on the small screen was simply I tried on the large. It is showing, there are showings on the large screen, but certainly the release of this was messed up. But I couldn't, we've been through this last week, but I couldn't disagree more strongly with Alex on that, and nor would Phil or nor would Robin.
Oh, come now, you know, going to a disease-infested place that you can pick up all kinds of kind of bugs from, etc., or actually seeing it in your own sterile sort of environment. There's only one choice, surely. Kathy, have you seen this as yet, or is it one that you're checking out?
No, it's definitely one I'm checking out because I remember this story, because this comes from 2018, if I remember correctly. And this was a huge effort, hundreds of
ages. The World Cup was actually held in Russia and right. Belgium beat Brazil. Clear plot point in the movie.
Clear plot point. But I do have a question for you, Alex. Are you sponsored by Amazon? And if not, should you? Because I really feel like the last
there
few
are
weeks
other, there are a lot streaming of services available. You've got Disney Plus, you've got Netflix, you've got Paramount Plus, you've got all the greats that are
all
actually
the streaming
you've
devices.
Even got the BFI and the Curzon Cinema, all of which actually produce marvelous stuff for movies the way they should be meant to be seen. Kaylee, is this something that you would be heading off to go and see 13 Lives? Or will it be a case of, go and see it? Of course not. I'm a student. I'll watch it on my own device.
Yeah, I've never actually heard of this incident, surprisingly. I don't know if I was living under a rock in...
You're in Chesterfield, Kaylee. That's understandable.
Yeah, to be fair, it is true. Yeah, I was probably in a cave in Chesterfield, not watching it.
Yeah, spelunking.
So I've not heard anything. And I think because of that, I'm even more intrigued because I don't know the outcome of the expedition.
Well, no spoilers. But not everybody gets out.
Alex, I must insist, no spoilers.
Thank you, thank you.
Richard, the sort of person who would actually say, don't tell anybody who actually won the Second World War because, you know, it might confuse people if they're not expecting the ending. Welcome, Sarah Huntley. You've missed our review of 13 Lives, but have you seen it as yet?
No. I really do want to see it. What scoring did it get?
It got a 9 from Richard, a 10 from myself. Natasha and Kathy are likely to see it, as is Kaylee. So that's the sort of general ballpark figure at this particular stage. We also considered 7, and I believe, Sarah, you were just young enough to have actually been around in 1995 when the original movie 7 was released. Did you ever see it either then or latterly?
No, I'm afraid I haven't. No. Yeah.
May I recommend it as something that you will find unforgettable?
For all the wrong reasons, potentially, Sarah, but that's by the by. It did score the same amount that Richard gave Lawrence of Arabia, a 10 out of 10, which is interesting. I personally would say it's close to a 7, but it's got Kevin Spacey in it, in prison outfits. So what's not to appreciate in that basis? Because it's like art imitates life. Or life imitates art. Let's talk about another character who actually emerges called OJ. You may recall OJ Simpson. could that be recognisably one of the real rationales why Jordan Peele has decided to include the character of OJ and a UFO and horses and Hollywood and so many other things in his third motion picture after having been responsible for 20 episodes of a revamped Twilight Zone, which didn't go beyond two seasons? Nope. Or yeah, or is it dope? I mean, let's face it, Richard, is Nope dope? That's the question we need to know.
We'll be discussing Nope next weekend.
Oh, you're not putting in Nope now. I
sent you the running order and Nope said was next week. I haven't seen it, so it's...
Oh, that never stops me. I mean, Richard, surely you can actually give a good review point on what you've actually seen online.
No, Alex, and I'm challenging you officially in front of everybody to tell Phil Leonis your views on cinema.
I don't know why this kind of obsession with Phil Leonis. I mean, you know, Phil appreciates the importance of the domestic market. Otherwise, the whole thing would be lost completely.
But where is Phil? Where is he?
Exactly, exactly. Yes. Precisely.
He's with us in spirit.
Sure.
Yeah. Always there in spirit, but nevertheless, we need to head off to a various other bits of pieces. So let's talk about the Royals, because obviously this is also a Royal review slot as well, Richard. Unless, have we completed all the movies that you're going to do this time?
Yes, but I would like, obviously, and on behalf of us all, to mention Olivia Newton-John. Yes. That's absolutely tragic. And what was so touching, I thought, I of course, enjoyed Grease enormously. It has, as everyone knows, a wonderful fan base. But I spent quite a while just listening to the tributes from her admirers and those also who greatly admired a battle against cancer for some 30 years. So, I mean, a truly, truly remarkable Cambridge-born, represented Britain in the Eurovision, but nonetheless, of course, most successful solo Australian artist ever. And somebody who really, really made a mark. The Girl Next Door, whether or not she was in skin tight spandex trousers, or indeed whether she was singing, I mean, it on stages. Somebody who undoubtedly made an impact on millions of lives, and you know, we miss her very much passing at 73.
And yet, curiously, Richard, you weren't so forthcoming and fulsome in your praise when Doris Day passed a few years ago, but that's another issue.
Could take you off my mind. You're so refined.
You're much too kind. I have to warn you, I'm never gonna set you free. 'Cause I was born to love you for eternity. Whenever you're away from me, wherever you go, you're never far away from me. I want you to know. I only have to close my eyes, dear, and suddenly I'm where you are. You better never stray, 'cause I'll never be far away. You go. You never. never far away from me. I want you to know. I only have to close my eyes, dear, and suddenly I'm where you are. You better let me straight, 'cause I'll never be far.
We will be having a little tribute to Olivia Newton-John because she was loosely connected with the show. And whilst we're doing tributes, we also go a special tribute to Morgan Taylor. Morgan, who you may recall, actually, Kathy, we did a show with a few months ago back in January, the creator, of course, of Gustava Sunshine. Morgan sadly passed away due to COVID, which he contracted over in Britain recently when he had a short visit. So Morgan, also, we send our thoughts and wishes to his family. He had a long and fulsome range of events and things that he actually done. Was twice nominated for the Music Awards and a whole variety of other bits and pieces, and again created some fantastic radio in New York City. And I mourn the opportunity that we won't have more opportunities to obviously work in this particular lifetime, at least, with Morgan Taylor as well. So Morgan Taylor, Olivia Newton-John, and well, anybody who's passed recently, we wish you all the very best. Let's move on to your royal correspondence element, British Richard. Where are you going to head to for this?
Well, I'm heading to tonight, where those who would like to. We've got a film, The Princess, which is on Sky Documentaries, and this is directed by Ed Perkins, and it's rather unusual. It's very unusual, in fact, because this tells the story of Diana from the period from her engagement to her tragic death. But what is different from any other documentary I've ever seen is that it doesn't use a narrator. On the one hand, that enables the footage, which is also punctuated by comments from royal commentators and also vox pops and observers generally. The footage has a very considerable impact, and I think most people feel that. But on the other hand, there are two problems. One, if you are of a certain age, and you know, 25 years now this month since the tragedy in Paris, you might not be familiar with the background to a lot of what you see. And the other problem, which may surface clearly, deals with panorama. I mean, you can't tell the story of Diana. I know William quite rightly doesn't wish any of panorama to be screened anywhere.
Are you suggesting that the journalistic ethics employed by the BBC in this particular period of time weren't of the highest standards?
I am, as you well know, suggesting, and not only suggesting, but stating that the BBC cover-up was absolutely scandalous. But actually, I was coming to that very point. We see panorama, but because there's no narrator and Martin Bashir doesn't describe what he actually is, a duplicitous, fraudulent character.
But Richard, he became head of religious programming at the BBC. I mean, surely the two...
That is absolutely true, and it is an absolutely bizarre detail. It's true, and I mean, it's quite surreal that that is the case. I couldn't believe it. But also, what it doesn't show, because it can't, because there's no narrator, it can't contextualize Panorama. I raised this with the director at the Q&A after the previous screening in June, and he admitted it was one of the things they couldn't deal with. So, as I say, if you don't know a bit about her, hopefully those who, and you know, somebody deeply unhappy, one of the great charitable figures.
There were three of them in the marriage.
There's no doubt Prince Charles hasn't come out well in this, but the focus is on her and also on the fact that we, as the director sees it, we are the guilty ones, because without us, without our fascination for Diana, the press wouldn't have behaved as they did, because the use of the paparazzi lower than vermin at that time. It begins with scenes.
But Richard, you know the journalistic mantra. It's something which is endemic through the whole world. If it bleeds, it leads. End of story. Sarah, from your own perspective, any thoughts on this particular thing? Or do you feel as though this obsession we actually have with Diana, it's almost as much as the Americans have with Marilyn Monroe?
Yes, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I agree with both of you, actually. I think perhaps what happened was, as you say, if there hadn't been so much fascination about her, then it wouldn't have imploded quite in the way it had. But I often think it would be interesting if somebody made a film of the fact that she didn't actually die, and what happened then, and how she would have continued. And
Ultimate
how she
universe.
Would have aged.
Starred Gwyneth Paltrow, like Sliding Doors.
We're none of them happy, and I don't wish anybody an unhappy life, but my thoughts perhaps are a bit that she did like all the attention and the fuss, and I think her world was so strange and so lonely and so peculiar that she lost all sense of...
I blame the dance with Wayne Sleep, personally. That was there was no turning back after that.
Any normal form of a relationship. I mean, I'd have liked to have seen what she'd have been like with her sons as they grew older. So it's an interesting... I might watch it, but... to be honest, I'm a bit fed up with hearing about how lonely and upset she was, and she lived a very privileged life. She didn't have to.
Let's face it, the week brought us back in that particular time in 1997, the death of Mother Teresa, Saint Mother Teresa of Calcutta. I think I know which one ultimately probably did more for humanity in terms of the human area. But that's not I'm not dissing Miss Spencer. She did very well as a nursery school teacher, who obviously got promoted. Kaylee, does this appeal to yourself, or is it a case of, I mean, Chesterfield, we don't believe in the royals here?
Well, I am a recipient of the Diana Award through her bullying work when she was alive. So obviously I've, in that sense, you know, met Earl Spencer, was invited to Althorp. So in that respect, I am always curious about Diana and learning more. And I think because at the time when I was younger, I'm not sure if it's because I'm from Chesterfield, but we don't really have an emphasis on the royals here. I think you can choose to be interested, but there's not that integrated sense of it affecting the North, so to speak. So I would never say never, definitely. But I think, as Sarah was saying, there's so much media on the topic. There's so much media and emphasis on the loneliness of Diana that I think it can become a bit of an oversaturated market, perhaps. And I think people like to profit on that loneliness to the point where it doesn't feel like she was so lonely.
Thank heavens we've got the loneliness of Meghan Markle to consider. We've got Prince Harry's memoirs as well. And that opens up a whole other range of poor me, what a victim I happen to be because of this multimillionaire lifestyle I happen to be parachuted into. Natasha, from your own perspective, obviously Nottingham, now in Australia, any thoughts? Or is that just a case of, oh, for goodness sake, not another documentary? But then again, they wouldn't make it if people weren't watching it.
I mean, yeah, and I'm probably guilty in that bracket as well. I mean, my dissertation was on Diana and her media image. So
In fact, no, did I not put you in touch with Richard to actually interview at the time?
I did an interview with Richard about it. Yes, I did indeed do. So obviously I have an interest. I'm invested in the topic. I don't know. It's an interesting one. I've watched a lot through that and through personal interest on the subject. So it depends kind of what it's giving that's new. And I suppose it's that that it's the fact that it's the footage and it's not the fact that it's sort of commentated on that's the new thing. But I don't know. I'll probably have a look just to get a feel for it. But I don't know that it'll be something I find online maybe at some point. My question for Richard, though, is because obviously Elizabeth is getting older now. We're getting closer to the inevitable. Things like this are not going to do.
Liz Truss is going to be with us for a good few years yet. I mean, just because we're talking about Elizabeth, you know, there'll only be room for one. So let's just move on there.
How is this going to work going forward? Because we're getting closer to a situation where we've got Charles. So things like this, obviously, if they're including Panorama as well, do not portray Charles, you know, rightly or wrongly, in a good light.
In a flattering light.
Going forward, is that going to, do you think that'll die down when he's king? Or do you think they'll just keep portraying it? Or no, you don't?
I think it's a very important point. What I think's happening, and we find this happening every week now, the Murdoch Press, the Sunday Times particularly, they're releasing details that are undoubtedly not illegal.
That's because they're Republicans, Richard. Rupert Murdoch is Australian-American. You know, he wants a republic, understandably.
He does indeed, but the facts, it is a very, very significant question. The Queen has, I think, helped tremendously by stating that Camilla should be, as we knew this was likely, Queen Consort. It would have meant an act of Parliament, which had to pass 13 or 14 other countries as well to be Princess Consort, which was a historical nonsense that was never going to happen. Here is the problem. Charles and Camilla, when Charles ascends the throne, I mean, he's already 73. I'm sure we all hope it will be a very considerable time. But
same age as Olivia Newton-John, Richard. That says a lot, doesn't it?
Well, I simply say when it comes to how popular he's going to be, when it comes to how these things are going to affect him, I think I've mentioned, Natasha, particularly, that the crown is back in November, and there'll be another 10 episodes, and every time anything to do with Diana and all of the, or most of the next 20 are going to be, comes up, it damages Charles's image. There's a lot of baggage there. Fair enough, he's done remarkable work for charity. As you've seen in recent weeks, there have been, shall we say, unconventional aspects to his fundraising. Also, I see that Michael Fawcett, who was his right-hand man for 40 years, has not yet been questioned under the honours.
Yeah, well, again, Richard, there are bags of money and there are bags of money, and let's just step away from that. Time is, again, beginning to beat us, and as long as we can hopefully maybe look forward to Boris's outgoing honours, maybe giving a peerage to Martin Bashir, which would be fun, because that should surely be the next line forward. Kathy, any final thoughts you'd like to raise, given that we haven't even had a chance to talk about the North-South divide in answer to your question, so we have to wait until next time for that.
You know, I just have so many questions and concerns, but that's okay. We're here every week and Sunday, eventually.
Exactly. Except in September when you'll be in Poland and Ukraine, but still, there we are. Let's just hold fire on that one. It's time we had some more Olivia Newton-John. Here she comes.
I'm